In Randolph County and from miles around, everybody loves that smooth sound. Radio Land Sparta means WHCO.
Car folks on the go, it's 1230. Oh.
It's WHCO. We love to have you with us. We want you all to know. You're welcome on WHCO.
WHCO. Time now for the People Speak program. We're taking your calls at 443-2121 or toll free 877-443-1230. Now, a People Speak.
And good morning. It is 9:26. I'm Jeff. This is The People Speak. I hope your day's going well. Talking today with 58th District Senator Terry Bryan. How are you doing this morning?
I'm great. Beautiful day outside. Almost got attacked and carried off by the horseflies that are swarming around the station. But that's like, you know, horseflies are out when the weather's good, right?
Right, exactly. And, you know, we'll take this cooler weather, too.
Absolutely.
Especially this time of the year, which is normally kind of sweltering. Of course, we've already gone through that for months, you know, so I guess this is our break.
Oh, it'll come back again. We're still in August.
That's true. But got a whole list of things we can talk about today. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you what, let's go ahead and take our break and get that out of the way.
Okay, sounds good.
And then we'll come back. Again, we're talking today with Senator Terry Bryan here on The People Speak. We'll be back right after this. And welcome back. Again, this is The People Speak. We'll get back to our program in just a minute, but right now, taking some time out to talk with us today is Robert from Hooker's Men's Store. How you doing?
I'm doing great, and it's good to be here with Terry. It's always good to see her, and she let me sit in her seat. So I told Terry I feel like I'm in a state legislature. And Terry, I don't know if you've had a chance to go out to the Grand, or if you will, because I know you're a busy lady. But I go out about every night, and at the store, we've had people from Canada, Ohio, Michigan, Tennessee, Mississippi, Nebraska, Florida, and Texas. So that's quite a variety, isn't it? And they love to come to Sparta. They love the shooting complex and the Grand, and we're so happy to have them. And of course, when they're here, when they come in the store, they're after the I Love Hooker's t-shirt. Because I got that plastered all over there on flyers. And they're so much fun when they come in. And I just enjoy running into them all over town. They're just such good people. And then we also have these flag shirts. And it's the Grand American. So we really work with those. We've got them on the flyer. And our two windows are full of flag shirts. And a lady in town went by and said how nice they look. And she's right. They're great shirts, and they're fun to work with. But now that the Grand's over, we'll be filling up the windows with our Sparta Bulldog merchandise with school starting. And, of course, we have short-sleeve tees, long-sleeve tees, hoodies, shorts, sweatpants, caps, windbreakers, vests. So we're all ready for that. And yesterday, we got our first fall merchandise, three big boxes of real neat long sleeve shirts, very similar to what I have on. And so, like we said, summer's slipping by. Terry and I were kind of bemoaning that in between on the break here. Summer just goes so fast. But we'll make the best of it, and you can come in and get your last minute summer menswear items, see what's new for fall. And we hope to see you down at Hooker soon. Terry, I'm going to give you your seat back. And thank you for all you do. I know you fight for Southern Illinois. Everybody knows that. And that's great. So thanks so much. And we'll see you. Talk to you next week. Anything else you want to say, Jeff?
No, just enjoy the weather.
I am. It's beautiful. Take care.
All right, Robert. Thanks for stopping by. Robert Graham from Hooker's Men's Store here in Sparta. Stop in and check out his selection today. Again, the people speak here. We're talking with Senator Terry Bryant. And like we said before we took the break, we got a lot of things that we can talk about today. So let's start out. I guess one thing I saw in there is the federal court has held the IDOC in contempt. What I'm not really up on that at this point.
But so they've held them in contempt of court because they ordered them to come up with a plan for medical care for the inmates, right? Mm-hmm. So for those that are incarcerated. My reading of this contempt charge is that they didn't even file the plan. Not that they didn't implement a plan, but right. that they didn't even file the plan. And so I've spent a considerable amount of time the last 2 weeks, because I didn't know this contempt charge was going to come. But I guess in retrospect, I should have seen it coming, because day after day after day, I have nurses calling who are saying, please help us. This is a mess, right? So as all the listeners on here know, I'm retired from the Department of Corrections. I was a dietary manager in some capacity in dietary for 20 plus years. But as you know, in that job capacity, I had to attend once a month the Committee for Quality Improvement, which is a meeting with the healthcare unit. So dietary and chaplains and healthcare, as well as security, all work very closely together. And I can tell you that 20 years ago, when the Department of Corrections decided, where the state decided to privatize the Department of Corrections healthcare, mm-hmm. it was a disaster waiting to happen. Not because the nurses don't want to do their jobs or the doctors don't want to do their jobs, but because instead of having state employees doing the jobs at many of these facilities, it is a for-profit company that's doing the job. And so, you know, if you're a for-profit company, you obviously are going to try to make the greatest profit you can. And I believe in this case that that need for profit has caused I want to say poor healthcare. Again, not because the nurses aren't trying to do their job or the doctors are not trying to do their job, but because they aren't given the tools mm-hmm. that they need to do the job and do it well. So what ends up happening is not only do those who are incarcerated get less than good care, but you put in danger the staff that work there. When, you know, if you go in, I know of a case that happened when I was at Pinckneyville, where a guy complained for weeks that he had a problem with his tooth. The doctor said that he had an abscess in his jaw, put him repeatedly on antibiotics, did not send him out to have anybody take a look at it outside the facility. By the time they sent him out, it was determined that he had cancer in his jaw, and he died not too long after that. So I know everyone who works in the Department of Corrections can come up with a story like that. Sometimes it's because you have a doctor who it was outside their field.
Right.
Sometimes it's because you have a warden who won't allow them to take the person outside the facility. Quite often you have people within the company who are making decisions that it's not, you know, you can handle it in-house because that's the less expensive way to do it and so forth. So I'm glad in this case that the courts are involved. I did an interview yesterday where I just basically said, look, Governor Pritzker, the buck stops with you. He's been the governor for 3 years. Mm-hmm. Enough time to stop making excuses. The fact is he inherited this medical being privatized. But he's been there for 3 years, and he was under a court order to give this plan. DOC says they presented, you know, they sent the plan, but the courts say they don't have it. That's my understanding. If I'm wrong, DOC can give me a call and tell me that I'm wrong right. in my interpretation of this, and I'll apologize. But I don't believe that I'm wrong in this. So where we are is basically the courts want DOC to submit a plan for what they're going to do to fix this. I just talked to a couple nurses yesterday, and without exception, every institution is short RNs and LPNs and having a hard time getting doctors. I understand that all of medical is having trouble doing that. But DOC pays, the DOC state nurses make fairly decent pay, mm-hmm. right? And they take ownership of their jobs. Those that are working for Wexford take their responsibility serious, but Wexford can't hire nurses because they don't pay. And when they do pay, they run their staff into the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm sorry to beat up on Wexford, but that's, I say it like I see it, and I and that's what I see.
So basically, it's one of those situations where the court has said, you know, we want to see a plan, and it's kind of like silence or crickets in the background.
I mean, a lot of what we see going on with DCFS. I mean, I think we're up to 10 contempt charges against the Pritzker administration in DCFS. And now we're starting to see it in IDOC. Mm-hmm. It's inexcusable. So I don't expect that the governor is able to keep his finger on every single thing that's going on in his administration. You delegate that to deputy governors and so forth. Mm-hmm. And so my understanding is that the deputy governor that is over IDOC is Christian Mitchell. And under Christian Mitchell is someone named Camille Lindsay. Your listeners from Department of Corrections will know that name, both of those names probably. Time after time after time, I have recommended to the department people who could be wardens or assistant wardens or take positions that are appointed by the governor.
Mm-hmm.
In this case, it's a Democrat administration, so I'm offering Democrat individuals to them who are highly qualified, and time after time, they just throw those names out, right? And so that falls back on that deputy governor and the people who are under him.
Mm-hmm.
Ultimately, the buck stops, though, with Governor Pritzker. So he's the guy who's going to keep getting these contempt citations from the courts. And at some point, you have to take those serious,
true.
Right? I mean, do we have to wait until a staff member is killed? Do we have to wait until an inmate dies because they didn't get good health care? I mean, it's inexcusable that we would have those kind of things going on.
If I got one contempt citation, I would be like, okay, we need to do something different here because it's not.
Listen, honestly, it would scare the bejesus out of me, right? Because mm-hmm. we have respect for the law. So I have to wonder at this point, does the governor or his administration not respect the law? Obviously, you know, they're just, the courts were looking for a plan.
Right.
Where's the plan? And then, you know, beyond the plan, you have to execute that plan. And in this case, I'm old school, Department of Corrections, right? So I care a lot about the staff, but I also do want those inmates to have a safe environment.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot expect, for people who are in our custody. And that is what happens. You know, they're in the custody of the state of Illinois. So we have a responsibility to give them decent care, humane care.
Right.
And so where I often differ with some of my friends on the other side of the aisle, because they tend to want to give good care to those who are incarcerated and forget about the staff. I'm trying to look at this in a holistic way and say, you want to keep the staff safe. You have to give good care to those who are incarcerated, because at some point they get so frustrated that they lash out. So for the safety of those who are incarcerated, as well as the safety of those who work there, we have to make sure that this issue is taken care of.
Exactly. I'll tell you what, we've got another break here. Let's go ahead and throw that in, and we will come back and talk some more with Senator Terry Bryant here on The People Speak. We'll be back right after this. And welcome back. Got some time left in the program again, talking with Senator Terry Bryant here. And, another thing is, dealing with, we hear about it all the time, you know, the potential of, rolling blackouts and everything mm-hmm. like that. You've been working with some legislation and working with Ameren on things, as far as that goes, or?
Yeah. So we hear it really outside of Chicago and the Chicago suburbs. Chicago and Chicago suburbs are on a different electric grid mm-hmm. than we are. They're on something called the PJM grid. The rest of the state is on the MISO grid. MISO has 10 Midwest states on it. And so what we're finding is that because of the Biden administration and some state policies, both in Illinois and some of the other states that are really a war on coal and natural gas, that we don't have the ability to put as much energy on the MISO grid as we once did. So it's very expensive now.
Right.
What people are seeing at home, especially if you are an Ameren customer right now, is probably electric bills that are doubled and in some cases tripled. I'm on Ameren. Mm-hmm. I got my electric bill in July. It was just over two times as high as it was at the same time last year. If you are on a co-op, which a lot of folks down here are, and wherever you live in any place outside of Chicago and the surrounding area, then you may not have seen it yet. But because if you're on a municipal plan of some sort, your co-op has a contract for that energy. You're not going to see that until the fall or maybe next spring. But mark my words, you are going to see it. Some of it is because we're closing plants, right? So we know that Baldwin is going to close. There's no stopping that at this point. In 2025, it completely shuts down, and it will become a storage facility for solar batteries. It'll go from employing just over 200 people to maybe 30 or 40 down to maybe 3 or 4 at some point. So not nearly as much employment, but you get to keep some of the property tax revenue because it's still functioning, right? Mm. But when Prairie State Energy closes in Marissa, St. Labore, when that closes, then that they're producing energy for a vast swath of Illinois. And so we're going to find ourselves having to buy energy from local states, Missouri, Indiana, Kentucky. Guess how they generate their energy? Through coal generation, right? So we're cutting off our nose to spite our face. I'm an all-inclusive energy person. I think we talked about this last month. I want solar and wind and so forth. But I would like for the environmentalists that are pushing coal and natural gas out, because natural gas burns almost clean, right? But they're still pushing that out as well, to tell me how it helps us to take, like, an Enfield, because I'll be representing Enfield, put 1,500 acres in solar panels where you're taking out, that's a green footprint, awesome farmland. So you're taking a green footprint away to put in a solar footprint. So I guess we're going to get some energy from that solar, but you're also taking away that green, which is really important as we try to, you know, fight CO2, right?
Right.
So I just filed 3 bills to try to combat this. I don't know if they'll get called. Probably they will not get called, because the Democrat majority in Illinois really doesn't want to do anything except destroy coal and natural gas. That's my interpretation again. But my 3 bills, one of them basically says that they cannot shut down plants like Prairie State and the sister plant in Springfield, that those will continue beyond 2035. Right now, they have to shut down in 2035 unless they can capture 40% of the carbon emissions. And then that increases for the carbon emissions that they have to capture. And if they can do that, then they can stay open until 2045. 2045, they have to completely shut down. That's hurting us, every place in this state. So my bill would say that they would not close. The second one that I filed says that $10 million of clean energy money would continue to go into finding ways to burn coal clean and also to open some peaker plants. $10 million would put an infusion into what is at SIU. You know, we have what used to be called the Clean Coal Energy Board there and the Clean Energy Facility at SIU. That's going to run out of money next year. So we want to put an infusion of money in there. They're making some, they've changed their name. It's the Advanced Energy Research Facility now. And so putting some money into the ability to look at clean energy, right? How can we use, they're looking right now at how do we use roughage from, you know, from soybeans? How do we use roughage from wheat? You know, all of these ag products where there's roughage at the end of it, How can we use that to carbon capture? And they're making some good inroads there.
You know, we've with Congressman Boss, when he's been on the program in the past, I've mentioned it too. It's like I am not anti-green energy, but I said the infrastructure is not anywhere near
things down a little bit. No one has been able to answer for us yet. What do we do with those battery components? You know, they only last 10 years. Mm-hmm. And then you have to replace them. They're going to the landfill. They do not biodegrade. Neither do the turbines on wind. And all I keep hearing from the environmentalists is, well, we're doing research on that. And by the time that happens in 10 years, we'll... Okay, but I'm saying split the money, right? Maybe in 10 years, we can also know what we... We have 400 years of coal right here in Illinois. We have more energy in the state of Illinois than the country of Saudi Arabia has. Mm-hmm. Why would we not be using every resource that we have here? And by the way, you mentioned Congressman Boston. I do want to send a shout out to he and his family. They lost the patriarch of their family, Gene Bost. Visitation for Gene is tonight at Elm Street Baptist Church in Murfreesboro. Gene stood a little bit less than 5 foot tall, and he was a giant of a man, a true patriarch in his family, helped to continue to build his trucking business on the legacy of his dad, Wiley. I found out that Wiley Boss's family came here from Somerset, Pennsylvania. I saw their grave sites at Kimmel. There's a cemetery on Kimmel Bridge Road just outside Murfreesboro in Somerset Township. And I asked Wiley when he was still living, they used to come into my restaurant all the time. And I said, hey, Wiley, are you related to those folks that are there? And he told me the story of his grandfather. I think I said father, but his grandfather and 12 families came here from Somerset, Pennsylvania, and settled what is now Somerset Township in Jackson County. Wow. We have a tremendous legacy. I just this past week finished. I got a fellowship with the Edgar Fellows. I was in Champaign for the week. One of the takeaways that I had from that is how often we complain and talk about the bad things that are in Illinois, but we have such a tremendous historical legacy here, especially in Southern Illinois, because Illinois was developed south to north. And so our historical legacy in this region is 100 times bigger, richer, wider, broader than even that of Chicago. And if not for Southern Illinois, we would not have had Abraham Lincoln. If not for Southern Illinois, we'd not have John A. Logan, who Frederick Douglass said was the most important person in all of history to the abolition of slavery in the United States. What a great legacy we have here. So we probably should do a whole show sometime just talking about Southern Illinois history.
Definitely. I'm a history buff anyway, so that would be
me
good
as
one.
Well.
So. All right, well, it looks like we're out of time, but Senator, thanks for taking time to talk with us today.
Yeah, maybe I need to start doing two times a month, because there's a lot of stuff we didn't cover, but I'm looking forward to coming back next month.
All right, we'll wrap things up then, and Senator, we'll talk to you next month.
Awesome, thanks, Jeff.
For the People Speak, I'm Jeff. We'll talk to you next time. Have a great day.